This episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you by NowSite Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. Bring all your digital marketing to a new level with their simple three-click method. And by Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
Franchisor. It's really been great. So we've been in it for 10 years. One, owning a franchise really has a support. Instead of starting out on your own, because I've done both, right? I've owned two other businesses starting out on my own.
Yeah.
And then the franchise. So I don't think I could have done this without all the training that they have provided.
And the systems, right? And the software. Systems.
And the major thing that's really helped us, and Pura Clean started it, I would say 5 years ago, they started these growth groups.
Okay.
And they actually matched up different Pura Cleans from all across the country. And we were actually picked to be in one of the first growth groups. So we were the initial growth group, which has been fantastic. So that's a great thing.
So you're almost like an advisory board to each other, sharing
ideas.
Yeah. I just spoke about that this morning on my online thing. I spoke about advisory boards. And then at the end, I used your idea and said, next week, we're going to talk about buying your own business. It may be the right time to do it. And you're thinking about, I used your idea. So I'm going to talk about that next
time. That's great. Yeah. I mean, this is to have that advisory board. You know, a lot of times you're in the nitty gritty of your business and you can't see everything.
Yeah.
So with this advisory board, you show them all your financials. You show them all of your employees. We actually go to each other's business.
Oh, great.
Twice a year.
Yeah.
So we pick one new person and we'll go there, and there's seven of us. And so we actually interview all their employees, and then we give the owner feedback on what we've seen. So these are improvements that you can do. This is what's working really well. And this is how you should shift your business.
So it's not just like, hey, I have a problem. What do you guys think of this? Or what? You actually get an evaluation from each other to say, hey, this is how we do it out here. Why don't you do this? Or this would make this faster or easier or whatever.
Exactly. And we share ideas all the time.
Yeah.
You know, if we've seen something that's really working for us, we share it. So, and then every other week we're on a conference call too. Or now we're doing Zoom meetings.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work. And they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hi, I'm Robin Hoy with Pura Clean Restoration Services. We are a fire, water, mold, and biohazard mitigation company, and we clean up your disgusting messes.
All right, Robin, thanks. I know we've been trying to coordinate this for a couple of weeks, but it's I guess it's a little timely with you guys being in hazmat cleanup stuff with all the COVID things that are going on, right?
Yeah. We're doing a lot of cleanup.
Yeah, I can imagine. And the word disgusting you use in the opening, that's definitely it. I definitely do not want to be in a house where you got to do cleanup. Although I have used your services, unfortunately, before a couple of times. I think Chris was like, what am I doing back here again?
Yes.
You know, for those of you listening, we've had pipes burst in kitchens and lost kitchens, but we've never had like hazardous material backup. Actually, you know, before I knew you, we had like a sewer backup in a house we were renting before that house that Chris did the work in. And we were just renting it. They were trying to sell the house. It was a couple of months. And there was something wrong. Like, I guess maybe the house hadn't been used a long time. So the sewer line going out and things had dried in it. And we got all the effluents and like backed into the basement. It was disgusting.
Yeah. One of the things that actually happens to people, a lot of people use those baby wipes.
Yeah. They're not really disposable, right?
They are not disposable at all. And I've actually seen pictures of the waste plant.
Yeah.
And it's just a huge ball of those baby wipes. So
it's
never
like separate it out, right?
Yeah. And it'll clog your drains. So a lot of our sewer backups are from those baby wipes that are thrown down the toilet. So
so you shouldn't use them, really?
No.
Just use plain old regular toilet paper.
If you want to use them, then you have to put them in the
garbage.
Trash.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Or use, you can get a bidet.
Yes.
Do that.
There you go.
That's probably the most
friendly.
Economical.
Yes.
Right. Exactly. Right. All right. So let's go back because we're going to talk about Pure Clean and the franchise you and Chris are running. But let's go back to where you're from, where you grew up, what's your background, and how did you get into business, and what really made you buy this franchise?
Sure.
Okay.
So I've actually always wanted to be an entrepreneur. Like when I was growing up, I was definitely going to go for my MBA. And ended up going to college, going to Rutgers. Yay,
okay.
Are you?
Yeah, go.
And I actually was an English major. I love reading. And so I was doing that. And then I was going to go for my MBA. Well, right. I never did that.
Okay.
So I think it was more of my father's dream that I go for my MBA than myself. And
right.
I ended up working with Barnes & Noble for about 10 years.
I was actually
a store manager and then a buyer eventually.
Oh,
so
okay.
I actually did use my English degree.
Interesting.
So,
but yeah, English is a good background. I had friends go to medical school, they're English majors, and you know, it's a good like liberal arts background.
Yeah, and you learn how to write. Like I was a horrible writer and I've definitely learned how to write. I don't enjoy it probably as much as other English majors do,
right.
But I love to read a lot. And
it's a dying art.
Reading,
I mean, like people they listen.
And
now.
writing.
Yeah, definitely writing.
There's a lot of people who can't write out there.
Yeah.
Anyway, so after that, our son was born and my husband and I actually both quit our jobs and we started a construction company. And this is back in 1999.
Right.
And we did quite well. It was all basically referral based. We never advertised. And we were going
like renovations and stuff in homes and
kitchens,
like that.
Bathrooms.
Yeah, Chris is very handy. So he's
Yeah. So, and he had been doing construction work off and on since he was 18.
Okay.
So at the time that he quit his job, he was working for his family owned manufacturing company. So, we both went to a little bit of change and to be able to be at home. I was commuting to New York City at the time. So that was hard having a infant at home and being able to get home in time, you know, if something happened.
But it was a good fit, right? Because he had the skills and, you know, you were a business person and
Yeah. So I learned how to do QuickBooks. I learned all the financial stuff. I could, do all the invoices and stuff. And I've actually been painting since I was four. So I was
helping
in one job.
Like that kind of painting?
Painting walls. Painting.
Oh, okay.
People used to hire me when I was a teenager to paint the exterior of the houses or inside. Yeah. So I definitely knew how to paint. So that was a skill that I brought to that.
There definitely is skill to that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's good. Actually, since we've been stuck inside, we're working on our fifth room of our house.
Right. I'm sure there's a lot of people doing stuff like that,
Yeah. So anyway, back in 2008, when the economy tanked, we were fine through 2008, 2009, 2010, the phone stopped ringing. And at that time, period two, I had started up and ran a after school program. And it was great because I could bring, at the time, now I had two kids. They could both attend with me and wasn't making a lot of money. It was a position from It was a missional outreach position through our church.
Right.
And then the construction business wasn't bringing in any money either. So we had to make a decision. So I heard a friend of mine had left another company, started out on his own. And I actually called him up looking for a job. And it turns out he was a Murphy franchise broker. So is a business broker.
Yeah.
So he showed me a whole bunch of different businesses, and Puroclean was actually an existing business. It's a franchise, but it was for sale in the town that we lived in, which is Cranford.
Okay.
So we ended up buying that, and that's how I ran into you, Mitch, and
that's true.
Your law firm there, and you helped with everything with the closing and.
That was like 2010?
2010.
Right. And I'd moved in there in like January of 2009. So I'd been there about a year in that location.
Yeah.
And I had probably met Russ, I don't know, a year or two before that? Not much longer before that, because I don't think I knew him before I was in Westfield. Maybe a little bit, but not much. Because I worked like out in Morris County. I wasn't even involved in the community. I wasn't here. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was great. And between Russ and you, you guys really helped me out because I had never bought an existing business before. You know, it's always
involved.
Starting one from scratch and not really understanding all of the financials and what they were, what they really meant.
Right.
So it's one thing to look at financials and see what people are bringing in, you know, what their gross is. But understanding what the net is and
a lot of small business owners don't keep really good records. So it's hard to kind of get through that stuff. So it was really the drop in the real estate market, which happened in the 8 and the 9 that really caused you to look for a new way to do business kind of around the same thing you guys were doing, right?
Exactly. And it just opened our eyes up to marketing. Right. We had, you know, our whole other business was based on referrals. So this is a whole new realm for us, market, how to cold call.
Yeah.
Cause we would, enter into, you know, insurance agencies, to let them know about our company, real estate agencies. I used to hate public speaking. So another good tip is anybody who hates public speaking to join Toastmasters.
Yeah. There's a good one in Westfield, right? Isn't there?
Yeah. I was a member of that for a little while too. And so that's a fantastic organization. It doesn't cost a lot of money either. And you meet some wonderful people and you learn more about them because of stories that they're telling within the group.
Right. And it gets you out of your comfort zone, but kind of in a protected environment, right? Where everybody agrees and I can throw tomatoes at you and scream and stuff.
Right. And they also give you a lot of pointers.
Okay.
So it's really
from
great.
A public speaking standpoint, like
things
like don't say and don't rock or things like that.
Right. Yeah. So the first grouping of speeches that you do is actually based on step-by-step instructions on how to public speak. The first thing is getting up in front of people.
Right.
And then you have to learn about eye contact. And then you have to learn about gestures. And then you have to learn about voice inflection.
Right.
So because of that, I was able to bring that into Puroclean and going out to marketing and networking with people.
There's a lot of places for you to speak. I mean, people, right?
Tons. Yeah. And I actually also do 3-hour continuing education classes for insurance agents.
Oh, so you guys got certified for that. So they get,
yes. Yeah.
Oh, very good.
And that's really all because of Toastmasters.
Because you went step by step through the process of.
And I wasn't afraid to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Now, Puroclean, it was really, so you really met Russ through a networking contact or a friend, right? And then it was him that brought you Puroclean and said, hey, you guys ought to look at this, or you knew about Puroclean?
No. So I'd never heard about Puroclean and I never knew about remediation or mitigation services. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Like we were.
That's a great advice. Go out, find a business you know nothing about, just dive right in, right? that's like the wrong thing to do. Not that it, everybody can know. The end of the story is you guys are doing great and you're killing it, but it's pretty funny. If somebody came to me and said, I was thinking of going to this business. I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about the industry, nothing about the business. And at the time, you and I, you both know, these guys were struggling, these franchisees.
Yeah.
I would have been like, Robin, you are crazy. What are you doing? And we didn't know each other that well. So we met and then I helped you close this thing and it's all working out great. But it's funny if you look back, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But we always used to joke because really it was Chris and I who started the business and we had one other person working for us. And we were working out of our house, you know, two-car garage. We had stored all of our equipment because we do have quite a bit of equipment. We bought, when we bought the business, we bought, you know, two trucks and then all the equipment that goes with it.
Right. They didn't have all that stuff, right?
They had it. I didn't have anything.
No. So you had to buy it from them as part of the purchase. Yes, you bought the,
exactly.
That's another thing. So you got to check the equipment out. You got to make sure the trucks work, right? I mean, you got to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the great thing about PureClean is they sent us down to Florida for 3 weeks of training.
Right.
So
that's their headquarters in Florida?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Are they in every state in the country? I mean, are they big?
They're pretty big now. They're, I would say, around 300 PureCleans locations, you know, nationally and then Canada.
Oh, okay. All right.
And then we were just purchased by two gentlemen who own Signal Restoration. And Signal Restoration is actually a large loss restoration company. So they actually purchased PureClean because they wanted the footprint of all these smaller PureCleans,
right,
but they're located in all these different parts of the country.
So they're doing major commercial stuff.
Yes. Like $1 million.
So PureClean was privately owned up until then, and it's still privately owned by these two guys?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was a public company. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's all private. And then they came in and they really revamped a lot of what PureClean was doing. They put a lot of money into it. They created newer training centers. Like we have a flood house, which means they can actually flood it with water and then have the class dry it. So it's pretty cool. So I can't remember how many times they flooded it, but it was pretty.
It's like one of those fire buildings that the fire departments use and they're always catching it on fire and stuff. It's set that way, right? It's designed to.
Exactly.
Make it harder for you or teach you how to clean all this stuff up.
Yeah. So it's basically a house within a warehouse, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Like
inside the warehouse, the whole house is built inside.
Yes.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's neat.
So it really helps all the students who are going through training learn how to properly dry structures. And that's what a mitigation company is about. So a lot of people ask us about, you know, well, I had this water damage, I get mold? And we're like, if you dry the structure properly, you're not going to have a mold situation.
Yeah, they're relying on you to do it right because you know what you're doing. And if they don't, that's what I think people don't realize. I mean, they get problems and they don't contact their insurance company and they hire a local handyman or whatever, and which is fine, and they want to clean it up. But then next thing you know, they have mold and they're like, I don't get it. Or they're selling their house and there's mold behind the walls and you find out there was a pipe burst and a flood and they cleaned it up. They never called anybody and it wasn't properly remediated because this stuff just grows, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you're not drying the structure, you're going to have a situation later on. And people don't understand that. And also, well, I didn't understand it, right?
You don't understand anything about the business.
Yeah. Just,
now, what made you, so what attracted you to the business? You must have been looking at other opportunities, right?
Yeah. Okay. We were looking at a whole bunch of different opportunities.
Like, do you remember what kind of stuff you were looking at?
Yeah, I was looking at like a consignment shop. That's the one that sticks out. I can't even remember some of the other businesses.
So it was an actual shop that you would buy?
Yeah.
Can't imagine that that's that profitable, but maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And were there other franchises that you looked at?
Yeah, so there were other franchises that do what we do too. And in my due diligence, I was calling other ones as well.
Right.
And PureClean just seemed a better fit for who Chris and I were, and the location.
Like Paul Davis and ServPro? Were those franchises also?
Yep. Yes.
They are. Okay.
They are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of them around. You don't realize how many there are. Like where our warehouse is in Kenilworth, there's actually three other restoration companies right there, like within two blocks. Yeah.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So it's like the unheard of business, right?
Right.
Because nobody
wants
it.
It's a big industry.
It is. It is.
But if you're on the insurance side of things, if you're on the claim side of things, you see it all. You see it all the time. I think it's funny because, look, sometimes luck helps, right? And timing helps and everything like that. But you guys hit a run of like hurricanes that we had, right? And then all this stuff. And then, you know, things that people need more services. I remember you told me when Chris went to training, you had to have him come back early because you couldn't keep up with all the calls that you guys were getting.
Right. And we had a big rainstorm. It was in October of 2010. And this one lady was begging us to come to her house. And we show up at the house and she has literally a tarp covering her entire house.
The whole house.
Yeah, the whole house. And we're like, what have we gotten ourselves into?
Yeah.
And we ended up cleaning up the house. It was water had come in from the rainstorm and actually hit one of her electrical outlets. The outlet sent a spark that arced over their heads as they were eating dinner.
And you could see it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my God.
So the fire department came in and they shut off all the electricity. And of course, she was doing renovations. So all the stuff in the Cape Cod house on the third floor was actually moved down to the basement because they were doing all this renovations on the third floor.
That was done.
Well, then the sump pump couldn't work, right?
Yeah.
Because they had no electricity.
Yeah.
So it flooded all their stuff in the basement. And just a FYI for people, if you have a sump pump that's based on electricity, you know,
and an electric backup, right?
Get a backup that is based on water pressure.
Yeah.
So you don't need electricity. So remember during Sandy and Irene, where they had, we had no power for like, say some people had no power for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Right.
So this would actually work because it was based on water pressure.
Water pressure, unless you lose water pressure, but that's a lot less likely than.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can still get those kind of backup systems?
So yeah, contact your local plumber and they can install it. And the pricing probably depends on how far your main water supply line is away from your sump pump.
Okay.
Because then they have to do piping and all that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I think we had backup. We had water pressure backup in our old house too. So we didn't lose the, but just for people listening. So this woman was in our area, in this area?
Yeah, yeah. She was down in Edison. And it was a contractor gone bad. Like he didn't have insurance. He forged her permits, her documents. He forged her name on the permits when he submitted them to the town.
That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he left.
It's terrible. You know, for people listening, there's some very strict, you know this, there's some very strict consumer fraud statutes in New Jersey, other states too, but New Jersey has a particularly difficult statute where, you know, the builder can be liable for treble damages and attorney's fees and all this kind of stuff. So you should make sure you have things in writing. You should make sure you get an insurance certificate from who you're working for, obviously referrals. Unfortunately, though, a lot of those statutes end up punishing people that do make mistakes. Not doing things on purpose. The bad people, like this guy, he disappeared.
Right.
So who are you going to sue? What are you going to go after? You know, so, and also for people listening, we live in generally like a low lying area. So we have a lot of, like you're in Cranford during the hurricane, like the whole town might as well have been a lake. I mean, it was just ridiculous with rivers and stuff. Westfield, if we have big rains, you drive up and down the street and there's the police, there's a fire department. They're pumping out people's basements, you know, because they don't know what to do. And they call that's the first thing they do is call the fire department, hopefully so they don't catch on fire and die from the electricity. But I see them pumping out all the time. So it's definitely a hotbed of flooding.
Yeah. Even just with Hurricane Irene, that was the first one. We actually had a waiting list before the storm hit. We had over 100 people
lining you up because they knew they were going to have problems.
They knew it. They knew it was coming. So we had 100 people on the waiting list before the storm hit.
Oh, my God.
And then we got over 2,000 phone calls.
And what was Irene, like 12 or? It wasn't the only few.
2012.
Yeah. So you'd just been in business a couple of years.
Yeah. Thank goodness we had been in business a couple of years because we knew,
you had learned stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely. Now, what I don't understand is like, I know when I helped you buy the franchise and these guys were struggling, they wanted to get out of the business. Mm-hmm. What were they doing?
I think they just did not, from my understanding, like the marketing.
I didn't like that side of the business, like getting new business. That's kind of 90% of your business is getting new business.
Yeah.
But I mean, it wasn't like we hadn't had floods before. We hadn't had storms before. I mean, there must have been plenty of business out there.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're knocking on doors and say, hey, will you let me come and clean your house? I mean, a lot of it's through insurance companies and building relationships, right? And then they
you
call your insurance companies. Who should you call? Well, call Pure Clean over in Cranford. Yeah. They know what they're doing.
Right.
And that's how I had Paul Davis coming to our house. The first, I didn't know you. It was before, what was it? It wasn't a hurricane. We had some big storm that came through the roof. I forget what it was anyway. But it was definitely before I knew you guys. But they destroyed our house. I mean, we had all kinds of problems. They like cut the roof open. There was water coming in. And
oh, wow.
It was terrible. It was terrible. But I got to them because of the insurance company.
Right. You know? So, yeah, insurance company. Like, we're on a couple of what we call program lists. Four different insurance companies. And so they send us out to jobs. Like, people don't even have to call around. They can just use us. But just to let everybody know, you are allowed to use whoever you want.
They don't have to go with, they can just call you directly and then get their insurance company involved as this is going on, right?
Exactly. Right. And so I think a lot of people feel pressured to use who they... Right.
They think it's going to make the claim easier or something.
Right.
It doesn't.
Right. Yeah.
And you're obligated to mitigate your damages. So you shouldn't like sit around and let your house get moldy for a week while you're hearing from an insurance company.
Yeah. And that's what's so important too, is to have a good broker. So somebody who you really trust. Somebody
that's who you call.
Yeah. Totally call your broker because they know, they've seen it all. Like, they've heard all the stories. They've probably had some in their house. But there's some really great brokers out there who their customers actually have their cell phone number and call them on the cell phone
when
they have an issue. And then there in turn, if it's a really good broker, they have our phone numbers on their cell phones as well.
Right.
So we can get at jobs. Like, we're really trying to get two jobs with under 4 hours. We do a lot of program work, and that's what our requirement is.
To get there within 4 hours.
To get there within 4 hours. Right. And to, you can start the mitigation there. If you're getting there like 11 o'clock at night and people don't want us working in their houses.
Right, that's a different story, but you like showed up.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah, so now, have you found serious differences between carriers? Like, there's different levels of homeowner carriers. You know, you think of like, you know, the Chubbs, the State Farms, the top companies, AIG, which I think is now Chartis or something anyway. And versus like, you know, your lower level companies, are you seeing like things that they won't pay for that you're like, listen, we have to get in these blowers. We have to do this. We have to rip this all out. And they're like, no, just dry the sheetrock. Have you seen stuff like that? Like, they won't approve it?
I haven't seen. I've seen there are definitely better insurance companies out there.
Right.
Some that are, okay, this is, they use us as the professional, right? And so we'll call them and say, hey, this is what's happening. We want to do X, Y, Z. And we're calling them just for permission because we don't want to do things that they're not going to pay for. And then the customer gets upset, right?
Right.
So, but there's definitely a better brokers too, who also make sure that you have the proper insurance for your house. Like, what I would recommend everybody do is to have a conversation every year with their broker.
Right.
I mean, we have to do that with all of our equipment too. Like, if we buy new equipment,
yeah, they
I
don't
have
know
to add that
it.
Onto my policy, right?
Yeah, of course.
If you don't, you know, and something gets stolen or something happens, that's not going to be covered. So to have a really good conversation, a good relationship with your broker is very important. If you're renovating your basement and you didn't tell your broker this and you don't have proper insurance, what if it floods?
They won't cover it.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure, you had a Wolf stove in the basement. You know, they're not going to bother you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've seen that too. So of course. people will say that.
Usually it's reflective on your premium. Like if you're if you go out and buy homeowners that's inexpensive, it's probably because it doesn't have the coverage that the more expensive policies are, because they're, you know, it's a regulated industry. I think people don't understand that, unlike life insurance and disability insurance and to a certain extent health insurance, but you got to pick your right plan. A lot of these programs can be customized to fit like the things you have in your house. So if you have finishes and high end stuff, you know, they're not just going to pay for it. You got to make sure that it's properly covered. And then even on the commercial side, because I know you guys do both, those are really custom. I mean, if you have a business, a manufacturing business or some sort of a warehousing business, you want to make sure that those things are covered. You know, I remember one of the storms, we had a client, this is on the residential side. He had like this retaining wall because like his house was like built over a cliff. It was like supported, you know, over the cliff. So you drive down this thing and then you cross a bridge, you'd be at the house. So there was this retaining wall along the driveway. Well, he finds out that the insurance policy doesn't have retaining wall coverage. They have an exclusion. You could have added a rider for it, but it was a little late when the retaining wall collapsed to find that out.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was like $100,000 to replace the retaining wall because it's a lot of labor. It's a big deal getting trucks in there, whatever.
And now a word from our sponsors. NowSight Marketing, the first all-in-one marketing platform powered by artificial intelligence. It's everything you need to market online, and it's totally automated. Build custom websites, optimize them for Google rankings, and automatically create ads and social media posts to drive the most traffic to your sites. Their fully integrated system generates regular email newsletters, manages all your customers and prospects, and provides up-to-date marketing analytics. NowSight. You do your thing, and we'll do the marketing. Use our affiliate link in the show notes to learn more about NowSight and how it can help your business. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's LAW to 21000. Or follow our link in the show notes to learn how you can get this valuable tool for you and your company. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their link in our show notes to learn more and get connected with Fetch. And now back to our show.
So I think people should just not take it for granted that whatever, the, you know, until an accident happens and they call you and you have to tell them, do you know you don't have any coverage for this? And they're like, what?
Right.
But that's, you're right. That's the broker. And sometimes, and I don't litigate, but I've had partners who do. Sometimes this litigation interrupts with brokers who, you know, never called their insurance agent, or there's litigation erupts and the broker says, listen, I've been sending them a letter every year. Here's a copy of the letter telling them we got to review your coverage. You know, you only had $20,000 of coverage when you opened your restaurant and now you're tripled your size. You should have a lot more. And, you know, sometimes, and then they have a fire or whatever, and there's not enough.
Right.
Not enough coverage.
And making sure you have enough contents coverage too. So contents is, a lot of people aren't sure what contents are, right? So a very easy explanation of what contents are, if you take your building and you turn it upside down and shake it, anything that falls out is considered a content.
Right. If it's attached, it's a fixture.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So that's part of your dwelling.
Right.
So they have two different policies. One is dwelling and one is contents. So it's important too, say you have bought a lot of things, like, you know, I have bought a lot of equipment.
Yeah.
So I got to make sure that they know about that.
Right. They're not just going to believe you that you had whatever certain amount of air handlers, whatever, you got no proof of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, is it your job when Chris comes in with the team? Is it his job to like save things and catalog stuff or keep track of it or do something like that?
Yeah. We have some great programs that we use now. We have this new program called Encircle. Uh-huh. And so it can categorize all, like we just did a diner fire. and okay. all their food. We had to inventory all the food.
Yeah, people don't think about that because they got to, the health inspector wants it out of there.
Yes.
You need it there for claims reasons, right?
Yeah. So yeah. what we do is, you know, we just had an assembly line. People would bring stuff out and we would take a picture of it and then we would, you know, dispose of it. So we bring like dumpsters too, like right. to dispose of.
And that stuff's got to be disposed a certain way, right?
Right. Exactly.
That falls in the disgusting category.
Oh, very disgusting. I remember I was driving home and this is when we're in full PPE. So yeah. this is the, you know, Tyvek suits, full face mask,
yeah.
you know, gloves and all that. And I had gotten out of all that. And I was sitting in my car. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I smell like rotten.
Oh, you
food.
Were on these jobs in those days?
Yeah.
It's funny how people didn't know you knew what PPE meant, but it was not a common term. Now
no.
it's part of just general Americana.
Exactly.
Yeah. But yeah, yeah, I mean, you must feel like, oh my God, just like hose me down and right.
Right.
Well, what's not that you've been in the middle of, but what's the most disgusting thing your company's had to deal with?
So I don't know if everybody understands what biohazard is.
Yeah, let's explain that.
Yeah.
<'Cause I do.
laughs> So biohazard is in the remediation area. I call it, this is what I think of biohazard, it's sewage losses, right? Because right. it has bips and bops. And then also not the dead bodies, but the parts left behind.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this great movie. It's called Sunshine Cleaning.
Okay.
And it's all about biohazard remediation. Probably not
it's
done
a documentary?
The right way. No, no.
No, it's a movie.
Funny movie.
Okay.
Funny, sad. It's a good yeah. movie. So definitely watch that. But basically we have to go in and clean up. So we've done what they call unattended deaths. So say a person dies.
Like an old person living alone or whatever.
Yeah, something yeah. like that. And nobody notices it. And then people start smelling something or yeah. they'll see maggots or something like that. And so we've done some in apartment buildings. We actually called one death in Hoboken. It was in Hoboken and it was bad. A person had passed away while riding a liftable bike.
And, an elliptic, you mean one of the things where the...
Yeah, you pedal.
Like he had a heart attack on the machine?
I don't know how he died, but he had died. And he was living alone, so nobody knew right. he was there, right?
Yeah.
Until the tenants found like maggots in their apartments.
From below, and like?
From below, yeah. So the floor wasn't exactly straight. So the parts left behind kind of went down the slope and in between the wall cavities. So we had to go in and clean it up.
Yeah. People don't realize that when someone dies, the body, all the muscles are relaxing. So everything comes out of your body.
Yeah.
Fluids yeah. and blood and.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah. So disgusting mess, right?
Yeah, exactly. And they also don't realize that they can call companies like yours.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They think they got to deal with it themselves and they yeah. got to call the coroner or the police or whatever. You can call a rest and you should call a remediation company like yours because yeah. they shouldn't be dealing with this stuff. It's
no.
dangerous.
No.
Unhealthy.
And it's, yeah. And mentally, you just don't kind of remember
that.
A loved one like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, exactly.
Too.
Right.
Yeah. So definitely don't enter the premises. If that happens, call a remediation company. We
right.
can come in and clean
yeah, you
that
call
up.
The police. Call the remediation.
Yeah.
Call
the police first.
Yeah, and everybody can then get there, and you can deal with it. Yeah, you don't have to deal with that yourself. My wife used to pay bills for a woman, helped her for a long time, and she had all kinds of medications and problems and whatever. So we were traveling in Indiana. Actually, that's where my son goes now, and she died when we were away. So she lived alone, and there was a woman who used to check on her mail and stuff like that. And she, you know, a couple of days later, whatever it was, whatever her turn to go in, and she had died, and there was liquids and.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff yeah. that, yeah, not pretty.
I would say that the next disgusting mess would be hoarding. So
yeah.
we clean up after hoarders as well.
Yeah.
And sometimes that is an attended death in a hoarding situation as well. And you
like
never
the hoarder
really
died like, inside the.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Inside their house.
Because it's so unhealthy.
Yeah, very unhealthy, and it's very sad what
sad.
We're going through. And yeah. actually, my son did his college essay on hoarding.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, because so I should explain too. So I have two kids. They're 20 and 18 right now.
Okay.
And they've been working with us and know all about PPE.
Yeah,
and,
I'm sure.
You know, water jobs and all
so
that.
So 18. So they're so the 20-year-old's out of school. 18-year-old's in school.
The 20-year-old is a junior. He just completed his junior year in, in school, and then the 18-year-old is going to college next year.
Oh, what a year for him to be a senior, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. My, that's my 11th grader. She's like, oh, thank God it's not senior year next year.
Yeah.
So, you know, you take it as it comes, right? I mean, what are you going to do? This is the year that didn't happen.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. It's crazy. Exactly. So what are they studying at school?
So environmental studies is my senior in college. Okay. And then my...
kind of fits.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually the other one wants to be environmental science, I think is going to be his major.
Oh, so, okay. So maybe maybe they'll go in the family business. Maybe they won't.
They could. They could.
They definitely could. They definitely could. So what's other things have you, like hoarding's pretty bad. I saw a TV show my wife was watching the other day about this guy who was literally like, you couldn't even find him. And the town condemned the building and they brought in, you know, remediation people. They removed 160 tons of material on the premises in the house. And it wasn't even empty.
Right.
The bedroom still had to be empty. The kitchen still had, it was just really bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really want to discuss everybody out.
It's really gross, huh?
It's really bad. Really bad.
I can't imagine. You'd think
and the poor family's going through that too.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
And some of them don't even realize how bad it was. This one lady was a hoarder. She hadn't had anybody in her house for 25 years.
Oh, so nobody knew what?
Nobody knew. So nobody knew how bad it was.
So how did they find, how did someone find out about it?
Well, she passed away.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we actually weren't letting the family in. We're like, you don't want to see this. Yeah. Let us clean it up first. And then you can come in.
You don't remember your loved one this way. Remember?
Yeah. You don't want to. And it's so upsetting for them too.
Yeah. Now, do you guys do remediation after like fires? Because I guess even with a fire, they're soaking the building, right? And they're
so a fire job is a lot of times a fire job, a water job, and a mold job.
Yeah.
Because they have to find the cause and origin of the fire.
Right.
And they have to have not only the town like has to send their inspector, the fire inspector, to see what the cause was, but the insurance company also has to send their inspector out to see, you know, was it something that they could subrogate later on?
Right.
To like a part, say a dehumidifier part malfunctioned and that's what caused the fire.
Right. So for those people listening, subrogation is when the main insurance company looks to blame other people legitimately. I'm not saying it's illegitimate. I have friends who do that kind of litigation. And they're looking to put the blame on, like, you know, okay, fine, we'll pay this $100,000 claim to fix your house, but we're going after the toaster company because the toaster malfunctioned and sparked and burned the house down or whatever it happens to be, you know?
Yeah. And it's not something that the customer has to really worry about. It's something that the insurance company does.
Yeah, exactly. And they deal with that stuff. But, you know, you may get called by your insurance company to ask, answer questions because they're subrogating and that's what they're trying to recoup their money.
Right.
So, okay.
Which actually is better for you too, because it won't be as much of your policy too. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Remember when Chris did our kitchen? So, the second time, like right after he finished and then the pipe burst again, it was because the builder, and I'm not saying he did this intentionally, but he had boxed in a pipe somewhere that was like, I guess cold air could get in there and there wasn't any insulation. So the pipe froze. We had a really cold night like in January and burst after it melted. And then, and then it filled up the whole thing. So I don't think we got hit with that claim because they eventually got the money back from the builder's insurance company.
Perfect.
They said, okay.
So go ahead. Not for them, but for us. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't too happy, but I'm like, look, I don't know what to tell you. I have nothing to do with it.
Right. Exactly.
That's why you buy insurance to not have to deal with this stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we have to go through all the people's contents. So just imagine you have soot filling your entire house.
Yeah.
Think about how much cleaning that would be of every single thing. So a lot of times plastics, the pores of the plastics kind of open up. And then when
plastics
during the fire,
like what?
Like say, let's just use an example of a plastic cup.
Okay.
So the plastic cup is sitting in the kitchen. You had a kitchen fire and it's really hot. Okay. So the pores of that plastic kind of open up and all the soot gets in there. And then as it, as it cools down, the pores close down a little bit. And so that soot is really trapped in there. So that's why a lot of times you can't get rid of that.
Yeah, things are like, why does this still smell, right?
Right. And then you see all these cobwebs around too. And you're like, what is that? It's actually electric static charge of plastics that were melting. And they form in the air and they go up along the ceiling.
Right.
So it's not
it's not spider webs. It's just,
Exactly.
I don't think people realize the kind of damage that even a small fire does because of the of the soot.
Right.
It gets everywhere. You can't just paint a wall. You have to paint your house. You have to clean everything. You have to clean, get all that stuff out of there. It's like.
And it's really important for customers not to touch their walls because the oils from your hand actually transfer into the walls and it will leave a staining. You'll see like streak marks. And not to clean it with your like regular cleaning products that you have at home, you'll actually end up streaking it more so and creating a bigger mess.
You're talking about just a regular wall, not after a fire. You're talking about
after a fire, after a fire.
After fire.
Yeah. Yeah. So after a fire, there's all this soot. And so, you know, people think, oh, I'll just clean it myself. Right. And they actually make a larger mess than if just having a restoration company come in. We have a couple of different products. One is like a degreaser, and then another one is a smoke odor neutralizer. So it actually gets rid of the odor that's on your walls or your contents or anything like that. And then we have another product that's it's called a chemical sponge, and it's almost like a magic eraser.
Okay.
Yeah. It does magic, right? So we actually, depending on what kind of wall that you have, say it's a flat finish wall, and we can use that chemical sponge and get rid of the soot from the wall. So no water is added or anything like that. So it just removes the soot.
Right, because if you're still adding water now to the new wall, and then it just you're going in circles.
Yeah, well, it depends what kind of finish is on your wall. So like on your trim, it's more of a semi-gloss. So you can actually use the smoke odor neutralizer and the degreaser on that.
Because it's more, it's less porous?
Yeah.
Okay. So are eggshell finishes better than like just flat finishes? Because they don't...
Yeah, I always prefer eggshell.
Yeah.
But eggshell also shows, like if you have a lot of like old plaster walls, a lot of times eggshell kind of highlights
the imperfections.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have an older home. Yeah.
Yeah. But definitely in a kitchen, I would definitely use eggshell because it's easier to wipe down.
Right. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Well, I think we do that too in our kitchen. Mm-hmm. So getting off of the actual remediation stuff, have you, are you happy that you bought a franchise? I mean, because obviously, and I just spoke to somebody the other day about it, there's basically two ways to go, right? You can buy a regular, let's call it a regular business, or you can buy a franchise, which is like buying a business in a box from a company that's selling you their concept. And I guess some support you well and some do a really crappy job of it. So I guess so far your experience has been really good with this franchisor.
It's really been great. So we've been in it for 10 years. One, owning a franchise really has a support. Instead of starting out on your own, because I've done both, right? I've owned two other businesses starting out on my own.
Yeah.
And then the franchise. So I don't think I could have done this without all the training that they have provided.
And the systems, right? And the software. The systems.
And the major thing that's really helped us, and Pure Clean started it, I would say 5 years ago, they started these growth groups.
Okay.
And they actually matched up different Pure Cleans from all across the country. And we were actually picked to be in one of the first growth groups. So we were the initial growth group, which has been fantastic. So that's a great thing.
So you're almost like an advisory board to each other, sharing
ideas.
I just spoke about that this morning on my online thing. I spoke about advisory boards, and then at the end I used your idea and said, next week we're going to talk about buying your own business and maybe the right time to do it. And you're thinking about I used your idea. So I'm going to talk about that next
Thursday. That's great. Yeah. So, I mean, this is to have that advisory board, you know, a lot of times you're in the nitty gritty of your business and you can't see everything.
Yeah.
So with this advisory board, you show them all your financials, you show them your of your employees. We actually go to each other's business.
Oh, great.
Twice a year.
Yeah.
So we pick one new person and we'll go there, and there's seven of us. And so we actually interview all their employees, and then we give the owner feedback on what we've seen. So these are improvements that you can do. This is what's working really well. And this is how you should shift your business.
So it's not just like, hey, I have a problem, what do you guys think of this? Or you actually get an evaluation from each other to say, hey, this is how we do it out here. Why don't you do this? Or this would make this faster or easier or whatever.
Exactly. And we share ideas all the time.
Yeah.
You know, if we've seen something that's really working for us, we share it. So, and then every other week we're on a conference call too, or now we're doing Zoom meetings.
Right. So, yeah, that's even better, right?
Yeah. So it's great, a great way to, if you feel alone, as entrepreneurs do.
Right. Because not every business has a husband and wife team where you're working, running this, and he's running around. Yeah. Or partners, they're on their own.
Right.
Yeah. So was it implemented by the former owners?
It was implemented, I believe, by the former owners.
And they continued it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I bet you there's not a lot of franchise systems that do something at that level. They should all do it.
Yeah.
They probably don't. Because, I mean, you have this whole system of, you said 300 locations that have experience that they're collecting on a daily basis that they can all share with each other. I mean, there must be things that you've dealt with at other parts of the country, especially if they're newer franchisees, haven't dealt with before, right?
Exactly. And really mentorship. Like, yeah. I actually won an award at Pure Clean. It's called the Rainmaker Award. And basically, it's helping other franchises, right? Okay. So just being there to be able to listen, hey, this is what's going on, and to really help them out. So it's a great thing to be part of something that is your own, but part of something greater.
Right.
And also with the restoration company, to be able to use the franchise system to get on what we call program work.
Yeah.
So the people in our corporate actually go over to insurance companies, their corporate,
right,
and to try to get us on their program work.
Yeah, insurance doesn't want to put you on their list because you're one location. They want to know your 300 locations, and they can rely on you across the country.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that you couldn't do that on your own.
Right.
I think the things that are attractive about a franchise is if the opportunity with the franchise is something you can't really do on your own. I mean, it would be very hard for you and Chris to go out from scratch, start to buy equipment, start to get jobs, competing with these big systems that have the insurance company's attention and ear to do business with them, because most of it comes through those channels, you know, brokers and you know, not directly. I think it would be hard to do. So there's a barrier to entry. From like, you know, your buddies can't open down the street and compete with you. I mean, he could, I guess, if he bought another franchise, but he can't do it on his own. I see franchises all the time and I'm looking at him like, what do you get? Like, what are you getting? You could just start it on your own. What's the point? You know?
Yeah. So definitely, if you're looking at a franchise, I would definitely call other franchise or, you know,
franchisees.
Thank you. Franchisees. Yeah. Call the franchisor too.
Yeah, you could do that too. But they're not going to tell you anything different.
Yeah, no. So definitely, and even if you call franchisees, one, that are local too, to see how the local, how they interact with each other, but also call others in other parts of the country as well.
Okay. Because like some may be more competitive, right? They don't give you territories. Right. They don't protect you.
Exactly.
Things exactly. Like that.
And PureClean, the one that we bought, actually is open territory. Oh. So we can actually market to anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they won't, but will they sell a franchise like in where we were in Cranford, Westfield? Would they sell a franchise in Garwood? No.
So we have a protective office location, so they can't have an office right next to us.
Right.
But they are kind of close. Yeah.
So, I mean, there could be one in Woodbridge or in
Perth
Amboy or whatever, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So it's a little competitive.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely. But if you're, you know, you stay on top, but that comes to marketing and networking and staying on top of things.
Exactly. And one of the things that I think we've done that maybe some of the other franchisees haven't done as much is we've done a lot of business with real estate agencies, and we'll go in and I'll go in and do a presentation on mold remediation. Because a lot of people don't understand the whole mold remediation industry. You know, they've heard that term black mold and they start freaking out. And just because the color is black doesn't mean it's the black mold that everybody's concerned with.
Right.
It's actually a type of mold called Stachybotrys. And that's due to water damage that hasn't been remediated properly. So you have some sort of water infiltration that keeps on occurring, and that's where you get the black mold from.
That's the bad one?
That's the bad one.
But the other stuff is harmless, can be just cleaned?
It's funny. The health organization has deemed that it doesn't matter what type of mold it is, that it should be remediated. Because you think about it, how many different types of mold species are there? And they're coming up with new ones or finding, discovering new ones all the time. So, and people are all different. So some people have allergies, right? So some people may be allergic to one type of mold species, but not another. So that's why they're saying, you know, it doesn't matter what type of mold species it is, but you have to remediate it. And you have to hire a professional remediation company if it's over 10 square feet. So something that people don't know is there's actually no mold remediation laws in New Jersey, and there's no federal mold remediation laws as well.
Meaning there's no requirements by law that you have to remediate things.
Or there's no
standard
guidance towards mold remediation companies.
Okay.
So there's a lot of companies that are not quite. They're saying, oh, this is a huge deal and it'll cost you $5,000 when it was like one square inch.
Like the basement waterproofing business. It's kind of a shock business. You know, they're like, that's the thing. Like, I think that a lot of people looking to buy homes and they find, you know, little bit of mold in the basement, whatever, and they freak out. And I think that can be corrected. You're going to, I mean, you can't get rid, it's like ants in your kitchen, right? I mean, you just get ants. They live on planet Earth. They're looking for food and you got to, you know, treat it. You got to put that gel out and you got to put stuff outside. Maybe you got to get it exterminated, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't buy the house.
Right.
People overreact. It's one thing if they took a wall down and there's all black mold everywhere.
Right.
That's different, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So most of it can be cleaned up.
A lot of it can be cleaned up. I mean, some you do have to take down sheetrock or paneling, things like that. But a lot of it can. So there's a couple of tips for people too. So say you are going away during the summer, and you turn off your air conditioner.
Right, raises the humidity in your house. Don't do that. You could lower it a little bit, but not much,
you can lower it or raise it up during the summer.
Raise it up.
So don't turn it off, because mold likes stagnant, warm, moist air, right? So if you have proper airflow ventilation, then you're not going to get that. So I've actually started a series of little tips for today.
Okay.
And they're like 2-minute videos that you can watch. And the
what
last
are they on YouTube
ones,
or something?
They're on YouTube.
All right. So we'll put a link in the show notes. People can go there.
That'd be great.
Watch the stuff. So,
yeah.
So if you're going away for a while, can you raise it to, like, it's the summertime, 75?
Yeah. I would
some
say.
Power?
Yeah. So mold grows between temperatures of 68 and 86 degrees usually.
Oh, geez.
But that's something that we all live in, right?
Right. And the basements usually stay cooler, right? Then.
Yeah. So I would say, you know, 73, something like that. It depends on your basement too. The circulation, everything.
Yeah, everything's relative. Like in Florida, 75, your house feels kind of comfortable because it's so humid outside.
Exactly.
Here it's different.
And then also get a dehumidifier for your basement, and get one that it's not just the bucket that you empty.
Right.
Like, get it so you can have a hose attached and
into
it goes automatically into your sump pump or into if you have a slop sink, something down there.
Yeah, because in 2 days you're away. It's going to fill up and stop.
Oh yeah. And nobody ever remembers to empty it. So it's like, why even buy the dehumidifier if you're just going to do that?
I think what's amazing about dehumidifiers is that you don't realize the humidity that's in the air. Like,
oh my God,
doesn't feel humid. And then a day later you got a bucket of water in your basement from the air.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you have one that can program, so you set it as specific relative humidity and just read the instructions on, on the piece of equipment that you got.
Yeah.
And then to figure out what you should really be setting it at. But and
yeah, then it'll level out, right? It'll, if you have it on all the time, it'll level out and it'll turn off when the humidity levels are right.
Exactly. Yeah. So during the winter, when there's not a lot of, you know, high humidity in your basement, it won't go on. But during the summer, it'll kick on. Yeah.
You know, it's funny. When my parents bought their condo, so they, it was an, you know, it was a new condo building. So they built the thing. So years later, they go to fix something, pull out an air filter or whatever. The dehumidifier and the filter system were never attached to the electricity. So it was never running for years and years. They couldn't figure out why they're getting this and that. And they went to change the filter. It was completely clean. Guy goes, well, this thing hasn't been on for,
yeah,
turned it on. It's not connected, you know, but the average homeowner, they don't know.
No, yeah, definitely not.
And this was like part of the HVAC system. So it was built in. You couldn't see it.
Right.
Unless you're an HVAC guy.
I've seen one where it was set so high, the humidity level was so high, it was actually creating moisture on the inside of their windows. And they had mold situation all throughout the house.
Oh.
Yeah.
We had our thing freeze up, like ice collected inside the unit because I guess it was, it got so cold inside and then it froze like a block of ice. And the next thing you know, the thing's melting. First of all, we couldn't figure out why the air wasn't on. And then we get water in the basement. Like, where the hell is that coming from? It's like in the middle of the room. And that's where it was. The thing was melting. Then the guy came over and it was turned out that we hadn't cleaned it was our fault. We hadn't cleaned the filter for a long time. I forgot about it. And then, it just backed up. And then, you know, so we had to let it melt before you could turn it back on. And it took a while for the humidity to go down and for it to level out.
Right. Yeah.
So I made a note about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, what's your advice, like if somebody's looking at a franchise based on your experience, what they should do in terms of if they're going to buy one, to be careful and to check X, Y, and Z? What would you say?
I would definitely say ask the franchisees their relationship with corporate.
Okay.
And are they happy with how corporate has dealt with them?
Yeah.
And to find out their processes, are their processes really good or do they need to be redeveloped? And I would definitely call at least three people, you know, five people,
right,
just to get different opinions. And also call people. So corporate is probably going to give you numbers of people to call. Call people that's not on the list too.
Right, of course. Right. It's like references. People ask you for references. Who are you going to give them?
Exactly.
You know, the person that hated your job. And then I would also
call other people that do the same thing, right? So other companies that do the same thing and compare.
Right.
See how that one franchise works compared to this other. So if you're going to call Pizza Hut, call, you know, I don't know, another pizza company.
Yeah. So I see. Okay. So you're saying call other franchisors and find out what they're doing, what their package is, what their offer is.
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Robin, I thank you for spending this much time with me because not everybody's willing to stay on as long.
Yeah.
And you'll get me. I have your bio.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is a production of Mitchell C. Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.